Hello, and welcome to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, our guest on the show is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. Thanks so much for being with us. As you're listening, you can keep emailing questions in for Mayor Dennis to ask. That is ASK at WBAA.org. Mayor, welcome to the show this afternoon.
It is great to be not there, but here.
We actually
get to talk, but as always, we're obeying the new rules.
You are normally sitting in the studio with me, but we are practicing the highest level of social distancing today, and so you are literally not here. Yes.
And you know what's really neat? This time it worked.
It worked. We're so glad to have you actually on the air this week, Mayor.
I got blanked last week.
You did. So let's start our conversation today. We're going to give everyone a quick update on where our local and statewide COVID-19 numbers are as of this morning. We have 19 confirmed cases in Tippecanoe County, which is one up from yesterday. 3,039 cases statewide. We have 78 deaths now. The Indiana State Department of Health also announced this morning that 16,285 tests have been reported to them. And we are in week two of Governor Eric Holcomb's stay-at-home order, which is intended to keep these numbers from going up. So let's start today with how the stay-at-home order has been playing out here in West Lafayette. Are people taking it seriously and abiding by it?
Yes, they are. When you drive on the streets or if you're out, just generally doing whatever personal business that must be done, you can tell the city's much quieter. You know, and obviously with Purdue students either being away or on lockdown, that obviously contributes to that as well. But I think like anything, you know, when there is something of this nature that has such an immediate and such a potentially permanent impact on people is issued when an order directive is given to stay home, to behave, and to watch yourself. It takes a while for that impact to hit in, and it's not uncommon for there to be a little lag time. Like I've been telling everybody, it feels very 9/11-ish. I mean, we're just in this eerie sort of unfamiliar area, and I think as this becomes more familiar, as the messaging is more consistent, as people are much more aware of the to-dos and what not to-dos, they're being much more compliant. Now, having said that, that doesn't mean that everybody's staying behind a locked door. You know, in West Lafayette, we've got 40 miles of paved trails. There's a lot of outdoor recreational opportunities available here. And that actually works on both sides of the river. But we're asking them to make sure that they do the right thing when they're out. And the focus of that is obviously personal spacing. We've often had challenges. We're a very social entity, humans are. We're very social, and we like to interact. And one of the biggest challenges we're having right now is making sure that people understand that 6 feet is about as close as you can get, and we want to make sure that they keep to that requirement.
I saw that you had made a video set to the classic 1990 hit, You Can't Touch This by MC Hammer,
demonstrating
social distancing guidelines, specifically around and in trails and parks. And a listener also wrote in just, I want to say, 10 minutes ago. She writes, I haven't experienced this in my walks, but I heard from a friend that Happy Hollow Park was really crowded the other day. And she wants to know about specific plans to address these issues in West Lafayette parks and other public spaces. I certainly know I've been reading. It has been an issue in some areas. It's certainly been reported in the national park system that people are showing up to parks, showing up to trails, not keeping their distance, which essentially flies in the face of the guidelines, because you can go outside, should go outside, but you can't walk 2 inches away from people.
No.
And so it sounds like maybe this is a bit of an issue.
It is. It really is. I mean, we're talking about trying to modify behavior that is so basically ingrained in all of us. I mean, when we're talking to somebody, you talk right to them. I mean, you're right there within hearing distance, which in some cases is within touching distance, which is obviously in some cases the necessary distance for transmitting this disease, this virus. And we are seeing people are starting to recognize that. Obviously, the video was done with a serious intent, but it was done with humor, and at least hope people found it funny.
Sure.
In order to try and make sure that they would at least pay attention to it. But there are people who, for instance, are married, People who share a residence together, people that are, you know, they're cohabitating, so their exposure is on a more intimate level anyway. Some of these people that are not keeping their distance are specific to that. I myself have said, I've challenged a few people by saying, "Hey, you guys, could you just please?" And they say, "You know, we sleep in the same bed, so we think we're okay." So sometimes the people that you may have might send a false positive, but there are still people, and depending upon where you're from, depending upon your culture, depending upon certain aspects of life, that might just, it's so intuitive to be close that do need to be reminded. The only thing that I ask is that, remember, you know, we will get through this. This will eventually be something that we'll talk about as remember when, in that sort of context. Be polite, you know, offering up suggestions to people about modifying specific ingrained behavior. You're going to have a much better result if you do so politely. But yes, we are seeing it in our parks. We're trying to make sure that we have signage posted. Some of the signs that we displayed in the silly video yesterday are going to be posted in our parks. They're going to be posted on our trail systems. And obviously, any opportunity that we have, and this is across the board for all the community leadership, any opportunity that we have to say, "Hey, folks, think about it," we're going to take advantage of that opportunity.
I mean, do you see it getting to a point where you would need to take a stricter measure?
Well, one, I mean, that is always, you know, that next step. Yes. I know some communities, because of their population density, have actually shut down things such as parks, such as trails, such as anything that could be, you know, sort of a public gathering space. And we have taken some of those steps. All of our playground equipment is off limits now. We've yellow taped that. In a picnic area is the same thing. We are doing the obvious initially, with the understanding that that will help communicate the message. But we haven't gotten so draconian to where we're actually shutting everything down and off. We firmly believe that, because of your assistance in the media, and because of what people are now reading in the newspaper, what their conversations are about with their family, we are seeing people actually much more compliant than they were. And then, through the power of suggestion and the power of the media, we're making sure that it's more than just something they casually see. It's something that is very focused to get their attention.
So the state health commissioner has said they don't expect cases to peak in Indiana for some weeks yet. President Trump extended federal social distancing guidelines through April 30th. And Governor Holcomb, as of this moment, has not officially extended the stay-at-home order here in Indiana past April 6th, which is coming right up. I guess, what are your expectations that this order will be extended? And then what is the immediate impact of that locally?
Well, I think it's going to be extended, because as all the resource materials have indicated, we're not there yet. We haven't fully felt the true severity of this virus and what the impact's going to be. So I think those are going to be extended. You know, I can't put words in the governor's mouth, but I know him, and I know that he is very focused on this, and he's going to do everything that he can to protect Hoosiers. The other thing is that something like this, because of the continuously changing understanding of the severity of the virus, is creating a sense of caution on everybody's part. You know, we've talked about the targeted age groups. We've talked about the people who are most at risk. We've talked about the varying symptoms that one might show if they're infected. You know, they go from the extreme of being on your back and immobile to not even barely knowing that you have it. But each person, whether wherever they are on that chart, can still communicate the disease. It's still, you know, you can give it to somebody else. So it's imperative, when we talk about deadlines, when we talk about making sure things are on lockdown, when we talk about trying to improve our ability to control this virus, it's important that we have a consistency of messaging, and that when, should the governor decide to extend the deadline, that people abide by it. And that's going to be the biggest challenge. You know, I think oftentimes when something is new, it's easy to pay attention to, even if it's something as serious as this virus. People are going to be more compliant at that first level of awareness. But as it becomes more of a product of our lives, as it becomes more of our day-to-day routine, that's when things get to be a little more relaxed. And that's when I get concerned. When somebody says, yes, I self-quarantined for a week, but now I'm going to go out, and I'm going to go to the grocery store, and I haven't talked to anybody for a while, and I haven't seen my buddy for a while. That's when things start getting messy. But the hope is that there's enough information out there now that people do understand there's a lot of really solid do's and a lot of really, really solid don'ts. And I hope they pay attention to that.
Well, and I was actually going to ask about that. As this possibly continues to stretch on, could people just become frustrated and feel like this is just unendurable? This is lasting too long. It's the summer. I want to go outside. How do you make sure that everyone is on the same page?
Well, you know, I think we've been pretty consistent, at least in this community, about the messaging we've been giving out. Had I not been, you know, benched for our phone call last week, Tony and I would have basically been saying, yeah, what he said, yeah, what he said. Mm-hmm. And I'm just teasing, honestly, I'm just teasing. But I think for all of us, you know, our generation really hasn't had that unifying event. We've had small events that might be relatively parochial, relatively localized, but we have never had an international, a global crisis that when we are in our wheelchairs can point and say, yeah, I made it through that. What we do now, this is that type of an event. This is an event that has all the world leaders concerned. Obviously, it's got local leadership concerned. We are doing everything we can with the information that we're given to make wise and safe decisions, yet at the same time, still trying to provide the necessary services. You know, I know here in West Lafayette, every day, I have a staff meeting every day. All of my department heads call in, and we go over operations. We go over assignments. We go over how the health and well-being of our employees are. We talk about strategies to make sure that we're in a position to be able to provide the services that are necessary, trash pickup, police and fire, things like that. And it is becoming more and more of a challenge because we are finding now how easily communicable this disease is, or this virus is. We're finding out now the potential severity of this virus. And we're finding out now that there are people who, even with everything that we know up to this point, right at this point in time, people are still challenging their safety and the safety of others by acting irresponsibly. And that's a big challenge for us. I mean, whether it comes from the president or the governor or the police chief or the fire chief or the mayor, the message is consistent. Knock it off. Keep your distance. If you don't need to go out, stay inside. And then the same old protocols that we had 2 weeks ago. Wash your hands, cough into your sleeve, and if you feel sick, stay home.
You are listening to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. We're talking right now with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. Again, as you're listening, you can still email questions in for the mayor to ask@wbaa.org. Moving to a slightly different part of this, the hit on the economy and on businesses and workers is continuing. The U.S. Labor Department has now reported close to 10 million people filed for unemployment in the past 2 weeks. You and I briefly talked yesterday about unemployment benefits numbers released this week by Indiana's Department of Workforce Development, which show an increase in unemployment claims in Tippecanoe County of over 13,000% from this week last year to this week this year. So, first of all, what do West Lafayette employees need to hear and know right now about how the city might be supporting them as this continues?
Well, you know, I think it goes to say that when you talk about that type of a growth, I've never heard that type of number applied towards a percentile growth. Mm-hmm. You know, really, the only message I can give is hang in there. You know, this too shall pass. We are all in this together, and I apologize for the gross amount of cliches that I'm throwing out there right now, but some of them actually play true. You know, the businesses that are being affected aren't just mom and pop; they're everything. Industry is being affected. The quality of life of everybody right now, probably on the planet, is being affected adversely somehow. But this isn't a forever situation. This is something that there is a time to hold your breath, and there's a time to exhale. And right now we're in that hold your breath mode. But we as humans can still try and do the right thing for each other. Again, we have talked about the protocols, what you can and can't do to keep from transmitting this virus. But that doesn't mean that you can't be a human. You know, I can't remember who I heard say it, but this is definitely not original from my mouth. You know, we can still be friendly. We can still check on our neighbors. We can still make sure that those that are at risk are being looked after. We can send positive messages. We can behave positively. If you're in a leadership role, you can make goofy videos about what to and what not to do. But, you know, when you get down to it, we as humans got a pretty strong skill set with each individual one of us, that we are all in a position to be able to have a positive influence on people's lives. And whether it be spiritually, whether it be through making people laugh, whether it be through, you know, as a local government providing the necessary services, I think if we all just keep a positive attitude, we'll get through this, and we'll get through this intact. For those that are losing their jobs, granted, that's going to be tough. But there are a lot of services that we have in this community that can help provide to sustain some quality of life, whether it be Katie Bunder and all the good work that she's doing through Food Finders, through the Red Cross, through the other benevolent organizations, through places of faith. There are people out there that are willing and ready to help. And all you need to do is go online and find out where you can get some of those services. You know, we are a very generous community. You look at Greater Lafayette and you look at some of the things that we've accomplished just by asking people for help. Well, if there's ever a time for somebody to be bold and not be shy, ask for help if you need it.
So how are you thinking about long-term impacts on West Lafayette businesses and general, you know, plans for economic development in this area? You know, how does this kind of hit on the economy possibly, you know, change some of what you've been thinking might be happening over the next year?
You know, again, excuse the gross cliche, but this is literally a game changer. You know, we're very fortunate. You know, most college communities are very fortunate because our business, our industry, our economy is generally stabilized because of that university. I mean, when you've got 40 plus thousand people who come to your community seasonally, and, you know, they use your restaurants, they use your retail stores, they use, you know, your facilities, they pay taxes in some cases, they definitely pay sales tax in some cases. We generally, when the economy kind of tanks a little bit, we're generally in a pretty enviable position to be able to be able to positively respond for that. Well, folks, this ain't that. This is completely different than that. And the domino effect on every community is going to be absolutely, in some cases, catastrophic. Think about this for a second. Think about property taxes. Think about what landlords do. Landlords all own houses. If they're not getting revenue, how are they going to pay their property taxes? Are they going to sell their homes? Think about the small business owner who is so dependent upon those 40,000 wallets that come to our community every year. Gone. You know, we're trying to do as much as we can by encouraging people to buy carryout. We do. Mary and I do it every day, just to make sure that we can contribute to our local economy. But that isn't going to be able to sustain. So it is going to be a huge challenge. I have no idea what the federal $1.2 trillion of assistance is going to translate to for those of us in local government. I just don't know that yet. But we are really going to be stinging from this. The hope is that when the twofold. First off, the hope is that the restrictions aren't going to be too long, and that once they're removed, that everybody will, you know, strap their boots on, get outside, and start contributing to our local economy. For those that have lost their jobs or have been, you know, indefinitely furloughed from their jobs, the hope is that, first off, we've got the support systems in place that will be in a position to provide aid until such time they can get back on their feet, and that because of the region, that influx of revenue into the local economies, then we'll be in a position to get people back to work and make people feel, again, that this was just one of those incredible points in history that as a country, as a state, and as a city, we all pulled together and got through.
So Purdue President Mitch Daniels this week announced the creation of a task force to examine all the ways that campus life might have to be changed, kind of in an acknowledgement that COVID-19 will still be an issue that we're dealing with after just the next couple of weeks or months, but indeed into next academic year, possibly over the next 12 to 18 months. Have you started thinking about, on your end, kind of that longer term preparedness, you know, best practices for the city and residents to continue to mitigate the spread of this?
Yes, we have. Yes.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. You know, again, going back almost to the first thing we started talking about, we are a very social animal, humans are. And when you get into that type of behavior modification, It really is challenging, and that puts people on guard, and it generates again that little bit of fear, because when you used to be able to take your grandson and go to the park and have him play with other kids, and now you can't, that's kind of spooky. But what we do know, and what we do know here in West Lafayette, is that we've got a very active, a very engaged, and a very informed community, and that they are connected. They all have the availability to get messaging, whether it be via technology, through cell phones and laptops, et cetera, or paying attention to the media. Thank you very much for all the help you two given us, by the way, to get our message communicated. And that message, after this is over with, will be one of solidarity. You know, as President Daniels said, he wants to make sure that Purdue is a campus that can be safe, that can be easily secured, and that can be something that would remove that element of fear in the event of future events. Well, local government's the same way. We have always had that disaster preparedness plan, and generally in the Midwest, that's because of tornadoes. But some of that still comes to play when you talk about a disaster that's more viral, that really has that hand-to-hand transmission component added to it. Years ago, we had a very similar understanding, specifically with emergency services personnel, with the AIDS virus. When the AIDS virus first broke, we knew very little about it, except for what the broad above the fold headlines told us, which is you get it, you die. So there was a lot of protocols and a lot of precautions that were made in the event of. And again, because of the potential for transmission, the thought of an outbreak was somewhat a concern. And again, I was doing a different job back in those days, but still the same thing was, is how do we handle mass panic in the streets? How do we deal with people that are using this as a weapon? How do we deal with people that choose to behave irresponsibly and do so in such a way where they're transmitting it, you know, irregardless of the population base that they're interacting with? The same thing still applies with a virus like what we're dealing with today. There has to be a course of action that's going to be taken. That course of action has to be based, it has to be tiered. Okay, if this is no longer available, if this service doesn't happen, if this utility doesn't work. And basically, it's just sort of a master plan that we've all had on paper in the event of other things, like, you know, weather events and things like that, that we could apply to this as well.
Does this feel different though?
Oh,
Because
yeah.
when you're talking about a tornado, we're talking about something, and again, it's not completely predictable how long recovery efforts last, but the edges are a little firmer. It's a more of a finite situation. And right now, it genuinely feels like kind of the deadlines and the boundaries keep getting pushed out on this. So how do you keep functioning in the face of that as you keep having to pivot further and further out?
The one thing about, for the most cases, the one thing about a catastrophic weather event, you can still get people to come and work. I mean, you can still actually, if you are physically doing something and you need some assistance with that, you can work shoulder to shoulder to get things done. And something like this, when we're talking about the virus, you know, like the coronavirus, you might not have that resource, you know. And then if you do, you're putting yourself in the potential of cross-contamination. So you're absolutely right. This is something that, you know, again, we've got the people who are so dedicated and so willing and so able to pile in no matter what the circumstances are. But that, in essence, could proliferate the problem from the get-go. But suffice it to say, I mean, local governments all around the country, all around the world, are facing these very same problems. And we don't yet know what the severity is going to be. As they said, you know, the spectrum could be from, you know, a runny nose to, you know, basically gone. And, you know, it's everything in between. So it's one of those things that, yes, local government is prepared to handle this as best as we can. But this is one of those circumstances where it's not just local government fighting this alone. We are so dependent upon the citizens that we serve to act responsibly, to basically keep informed, to not panic, but to behave as adults and behave as parents and behave as guardians to make sure that the necessary precautions are being taken at the home.
What can you tell us about what you are hearing regarding the capacity for patients at area hospitals?
Right now, I mean, from what I'm being told, you know, there is an anticipated surge. And I think that both the Franciscans, excuse me, I lose my voice, IU and the Franciscans are taking the necessary precautions to be able to house as many patients as possible. And the challenge will always be having the appropriate number of medical professionals that can be dealt with. But I can only resort back to the old police training we used to get. We always used to get these hypothetical scenarios that you would just kind of roll your eyes and go, yeah, right, like that's going to ever happen. Well, it's happening. And I'm sure, I've got some friends that work in the medical field, and we've had these conversations about, we've taken what if to what now, and they are prepared. The folks that are going to be on the front lines treating people are in a position to handle a much larger volume of people that are going to be in need of medical assistance. I know that the Franciscans have started a structure, an external structure, so they can treat people externally as well, outside of the physical confines of the hospital. Testing is obviously a critical point too. They're having basically drive-through testing now. That will minimize the contact between, medical providers and people that are in need of services. And then, we talk about being able to activate the National Guard. We talk about being able to activate emergency responders. So there is a very general system in place, and the hope is that we will not have to pull the trigger on it.
I know as well. So I spoke with the public health officer for Fountain and Warren counties last week, and they've had a few deaths from COVID-19 this week. And he talked about how part of the concern regarding a surge in cases in more rural areas like those counties is that their hospital facilities don't have the capability of providing the same
No.
care as a larger hospital, but that the larger hospitals, and he specifically mentioned Indianapolis and our area, could then also be full. So in a way, we're not just talking about how we'll be impacted by people getting sick in West Lafayette. We're also talking about the impact of people getting sick in Covington or Fowler or in
Sure.
Williamsport.
Sure. And that is an issue that, the healthcare providers, I don't want to be overly vague, but the general concept is that, if you can dream about it happening at some point in time, it'll probably happen. And a lot of, if you look at what's been going on in New York and some of the major metropolitan areas where they've had a much more dense densely populated area, and they're dealing with multiple cases at very, very high levels at the same time. Generally, what it is do you remember the old TV show MASH?
I do.
Yeah, I didn't think you're old enough to. But anyway, when a helicopter would come in, it was all hands on deck. And then they would do the immediate treatment that needed to be done. And then they would put them in an area where they could go ahead and either get some extended treatment and try and do better. I think that's exactly what's going to happen here. We've got the medical staff, they're highly trained, highly dedicated professionals. And I think that they'll be in a position to be able to triage this appropriately.
That is our time for today. Mayor Dennis, thanks so much for being with us. You can find this program on our website, wbaa.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, West Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfort. Send us your questions throughout the week to ask@wbaa.org. Thanks for listening, and have a great rest of the day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.